Yes.
Lisa, you got it, or I'm going to do it?
You should probably do it.
All right. I am going to do it.
Sorry.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sim flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Naima and Lisa? Is it working?
It feels so creamy. It almost sounded like you mispronounced my name. That's how great it's working.
Well, you know, the fiend is covered by a BIFCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse from anyone except governments. Learn more at BIFCOT.org. I'm Michael Dean, and Lisa, which name are we using here for you, Lisa? Lisa Fiend?
Yeah, sure, that works.
All right. And we got this new guy. I've heard great things about him. I'm sorry, it's Naima Vedati.
Naima.
Naima.
Yeah.
It's Naima Vedati, okay. And he, I don't know much about him, but he comes highly recommended. He's kind of the star of and worked on the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which I've been meaning to watch. I've heard it's great. A lot of people love it.
It's amazing.
And the director said, you got to get this guy on your show and, you know, try to get him to be a host. So I hope you're a host.
Here I am. This is my audition. Hopefully I do well. I'm so nervous.
You're already past it, man.
So this is our pilot episode.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. Yeah, so Naima Vedati, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Do I have to do that again? Jeez. Come back after 4 years paternity leave. I have to reintroduce myself. Trump is president. The world is just, who knows?
I said before the show, it's like one of those, you know, those Japanese soldiers they'd find on islands like 10 years after the Korean War that were still fighting the war. Yeah,
man. Well, I don't even know what war I'm fighting now. I guess I'm fighting against libertarian fascism. Is that a thing?
And just like, you know, really
national anarchists
just eating each other, because someone said
that too.
What do libertarians hate more than the state? Each other. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well,
so much drama in my life.
You know,
in y'all's life.
When we started this show, I guess I can't play it. You aren't one of my best friends who's been like working with me for
drop the ruse.
7 or 8 years.
Get with it. That's fake news.
Yeah, it is. Somebody said that. Fake news. Have you seen that there's an emoji with worms now on
I did. I love it.
On Facebook.
Yeah. I use it with my mom all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, "How are you doing today, worms?"
Yeah.
Busy, Ma. No, I love you, Ma. I love you.
She's Nima's mom is a school teacher. Who
former had, school teacher
had Ron Paul come teach to her class one day.
That's
really
true.
Yeah. Cool.
It was Constitution Day, and she actually invited him to talk to the whole school. And the administration
apparently was the congressman of the district.
Yep, he was their congressman. He came and handed out constitutions. Apparently, some in the administration were not too keen on him being there. At least my mom says
we can't have a constitution.
She exaggerates just a little bit.
Constitution Day. That's horrible. Yeah.
But it was great. That's actually how I became a libertarian. That's the first time I heard his name.
Really?
He came and talked to my mom's classroom. It's great. Anyway, love you, Mom.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say love you.
She's great.
Hi, Mom. I'm on radio.
I dig her.
Hey.
I used to tell dirty jokes when we were podcast only. I used to tell dirty jokes and like because I knew Nima's mom listened to get him in trouble.
To embarrass me? Yeah.
Before
embarrass me in front of my mom?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Back in those days,
I actually considered your little brother Knight for like another co-host. How old is he now?
Knight is great. I think he's 16 or 17.
He's got his first job.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. He's got mic skills. At least when he raps, he's actually a better rapper than me. He's great. He's got the mic skills, and he's got a girlfriend, a long term girlfriend. I think he's been
so he's not shy anymore because he has a girlfriend, right?
No, if you have a girlfriend for more than a year in high school, you are shy. You found one person you can talk to, and so that's what you're sticking with. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I don't know if he's shy or not in front of his friends, but he's outgoing. He's done like open mics and stuff like that on stage.
Good.
So he's
well,
good.
Wow.
I'm
very, very proud of him. If he's listening too, I'm very proud of you, Knight. And
tell
Frank's awesome too.
If he wants to come on and be on the show sometime too.
Okay.
I'd have Frank on too, but I think Frank couldn't stop cussing. I really think it'd be impossible. I've talked to him about that. He said I couldn't stop cussing to be on the radio.
Yeah. I believe it. I believe it. Yeah. He's a blue collar guy, so he cusses all day, every day.
So do I. If I can do this, he can do it.
That's true.
Yeah, it's bad over here. I work from home alone, so.
You work at home and cuss.
You have a teenager too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So you probably cuss a lot with your kid.
Yeah.
I know. I do with my kids. My wife has to get on to me about it. But yeah, we don't plan on sending them to school ever. So I mean,
Lisa
can give you parenting tips because her kid is like 14, 15 years ahead of yours or something.
He's seven. He just turned 17. Yep.
Mm-hmm. How old are your kids now, Nima?
Done with school. And...
Lily is 3, and Archer is 1.5.
Oh, DJ says hi and hugs to you.
Hi, DJ. Hugs, DJ.
And she was wondering about the name Archer. It's not from the cartoon, is it?
No. But I'm doomed to hear that for the rest of my life, apparently. It's not after the TV show. It's almost Ben Stone related. So Ben tells this story about how an acre is the distance an average man could shoot an arrow.
An acre
was kind of like the original homesteading. And... Oh,
that's
did I drop everybody? Yeah. Yeah, it's great. And so it's that. And then his middle name is Azad. So his first two initials are AA, which sobriety definitely helped me to make kids. And Azad means freedom in Farsi. So kind of like a trifecta of naming reasons. And he's a little wild man, so it kind of fits. He loves being out in the woods.
Wow. That's great, man. I love that. I love that Ben Stone rap about the arrows. That's
I do too.
That's one of the shows I edited for radio and play, you know, once a year on radio on the weekends, whether I need to or not. It's great.
I can't remember what episode it is. If you can remember it, send it my way. Send the episode number my way.
I think it has Arrow in the title or in the show note. If you use the search on badquaker.com and search
Insight,
arrows.
Yeah. Okay.
Arrow or arrows, I'm pretty sure. ARROWS, not EROS for the listeners.
I'm putting that on a sticky note right now.
You'll find it. Yep.
How is Ben doing?
Ben and I are kind of mirrored each other in our demise and then recovery, you know, our slow recovery.
We were real worried about him for a while.
Yeah,
but he was doing a lot of stuff lately.
He was kind of getting what's it when your brain goes? What's it called? Dementia.
Dementia.
And he was also having like heart problems. Like he's in the hospital a few times for that. And I was having breathing problems to where just I couldn't breathe. And now I'm on oxygen and, you know, was on prednisone for a long time. And like because of that, I, you know, have bone weakness and have to take extra calcium and vitamin D trying to get the bone back and bone density and have to walk with a cane sometimes. And I'm just a wreck. But
it's almost like you have bone-itis.
I have bone-itis. Where's that from? Futurama,
yeah.
Yeah.
The guy that freezes himself, the 80s guy. My only regret is that I have bone-itis.
Reaganauts. Yeah, he bought the company almost had the cure for bone-itis, bought it and destroyed it to raise
the
stock.
In a hostile takeover, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. Yeah. Some swinging Reaganauts from the 80s, you and me.
Yeah, we're so old now that the Fiends have switched from Simpsons references to Futurama references.
I know. So I want to talk a bit about the so Ben and I are both getting better slowly. Like basically we're both somewhat out of the woods, not completely, don't know if we'll ever be out of the woods, but we're not in danger of dying every day. And that's no exaggeration for him and I from like 2 years ago till about a year ago. You know, it was bad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm glad you're both on the mend, man. It was worrisome for a while.
We thought for a while it was like, you know, the government had invented a ray that just makes you stupider or something. But then we found out it was, for me, a lot of it was having sleep apnea. And basically, like, I was oxygen deprived for like 5 years. You know, I could trace it back to like when I went to Pork Fest, like, I had this like breathing event on the plane. And then when I got there and it was, you know, I just had a hard time at that event, and it was something about like, you know, low oxygen on the plane, like to where it didn't bother everyone else, but I was messed up from it, and I was having problems and being dizzy and stuff. So I could trace it back to at least then, which was 4 or 5 years ago, but it really got bad, like horribly bad, like 2.5 years ago, to where I just couldn't breathe and had to be put on oxygen, had to quit vaping, and you know, I've done a lot of changes since then. But basically, like during, you know, normal oxygen is like 90 to 95% oxygen saturation. you know, 100 is great. Like, athletes have 100 most of the time, or 99. But, you know, like, you're healthy if you're between 90 and 95. And, you know, I have a measuring device, and I took sleep tests and sleep study labs and things. And, you know, I was down to like 75 or 80% sometimes at night. So I was just not breathing, you know, and I was suffocating my brain, basically. So,
well, yeah, I mean, the first episode when you got your oxygen tanks, it was like night and day. It was like Jekyll and Hyde. I think I, you guys even made that joke.
Suddenly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was perky all of a sudden, right, where I'd been like, you know, so I'm a lot better. Ben's a lot better. And Ben's doing Fiend shows once a month, too. We have to pre-record them. Maybe I'll do one of those with you and me and him, Nima, at some point.
That's a good idea. Yeah. When I move out to the woods, also, my internet's going to be iffy. So we could maybe do.
And that's better for those, because if it's iffy, I can sort of, you know, we could say, oh, let's do that again and take it out or whatever. So, yeah.
Right.
Excellent. So I guess let's talk a little bit about. I have this topic. Lisa didn't really like it because she said she's never been a statist, but I know you used to be an inveterate liberal like me.
Who
at
did?
One point. I've been asked, Lisa.
Okay.
I asked her about. So the question I've been asking every fiend is, so I started a couple days ago with, like, at some point in my life, I said the phrase, "I don't care if the government spies on me; I have nothing to hide." I said that like 12 years ago. I said, like, 20 years ago, I said only the government should have guns, only the military and police. Although I hated the military and I hated the idea of police, but I thought for some reason they should only have guns.
Right.
And then, like, when I was like 15, I said, "Dad, I'm a communist," and I actually believed it. So, ridiculous stuff I've said in my life that at this point, if someone said it, I'd be like, if we got 1 minute, let's start with your statements, and then when we come back, we can discuss. We can put you under the microscope.
Let's see. When I was young, I also said, I didn't say I was a communist, but I did do that. Yeah, but that was later. Before that, I did that old trope of, well, communism works in theory or something like that, or I at least believed it.
It's never really been tried. That's what Phil said.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, in high school, I floated the idea of welfare sex because I thought that people who can't get laid, well, getting laid, it's kind of a I thought it was a basic human right, like healthcare or something.
Language. Radio.
Is laid not radioable? Okay,
it's,
sorry.
Yeah, we'll talk in a good break.
Welfare coitus, people who couldn't engage in coitus.
Yes.
Thought maybe the government should provide an avenue for that. Obviously ridiculous. And I wrote a paper in a high school writing class about how Bill Clinton was my hero.
Worms were
In retrospect,
you're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
So, the Freedom Fiends reuniting for at least one night.
Yeah.
Hopefully more with
reunion tour. Maybe
with the OG Fiend, with the founding Fiend. That's your nickname, Nima Vedotti. Nima Vedotti and I started the show, I would say April Fool's Day, but it was actually March 31st, 2011. It started as a podcast, but we released it at night. So people woke up April Fool's to, we've got a podcast called The Freedom Fiends.
And it wasn't called The Freedom Fiends, right? It was called Guns and Weed Podcast
for eight episodes. And I said, you know, if we're trying to reach more than preaching to the choir, we need to change it to something that's not going to freak people out the first time.
Yeah, so your idea was yakking about freedom. And I was
horrible. Which is
freedom yak. It was freedom yak.
It's funny because, well, that was yakking about freedom was another, you know, variation.
Oh, it was. Okay.
But I wanted it to have a picture.
It was foreshadowing, right?
It was, because I wanted to have it called Freedom Yak and have a picture of a yak. And it's a takeoff on a Simpsons. On Simpsons, there's an afternoon talk show called, like, Afternoon Yak. And it has a picture of a yak, I think. But so I wanted to call it that. You said that's horrible. It's ridiculous. And you said freedom was. Fiends.
Fiends.
But you said fiends. I misheard it as fiends. And fiends is code for. Well, I tried.
It means the same thing. Yeah.
Right. It means the same thing.
It's fiends is the cool way of saying fiends. Yeah, you don't need that extra D. It just makes it ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, freedom fiends. Yeah.
So we started that 8 episodes later. The first 8 episodes are still up on the Freedom Fiend site. You can go find them. Go on the sidebar in the archives. Go to April 2011 in the first one. It's like 15 minutes long. And I was still a mid-archist. I hadn't gone full-on AnCap yet. Yeah. I was like in the last weeks of it. I was talking about the Constitution in that episode.
When I met you and I visited your house, you had Fox News on, blaring on your TV the whole time we were there.
But
he showed me every one of your guns. It was hilarious.
That's like, that makes me sound crazy. Yeah, he had all the guns and Fox News. But that was the week, that was like the month that Glenn Beck was talking about ending the Fed and things like that. Like before he got kicked off.
Like before he got fired. Yeah. I remember.
It was around that time. Yeah. I was just, you know, Fox News, and they had, what's his name? Judge Napolitano on. You know, it was, they
had a show, and it was a good show. Was it called? Freedom Watch? What was it called?
Yeah, and there weren't like 1,000 good podcasts then, you know?
That's true. There was Scott Horton.
What else was
Scott Horton. There's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live, and there was the late, great,
you know,
talked about him for the show.
Will Grigg?
Yeah, there was the late, great Will Grigg.
Did he have a podcast then? He had one then?
He was a writer, I think, only.
Yep.
I was reading his writer.
I think he did Freedom Zealot later. But you Lou Rockwell, the Lou Rockwell show back in the day, like before Freedom Fiends, was actually really good.
But the audio was bad.
No, it was good. Listen to the one you're right.
He would have guests all the time. And like, you know, they'd be on landlines with speakerphone. A lot of it was unlistenable to me.
When I drove from Austin to Wyoming for my first reporter job, I burned a CD of podcasts to listen to on the way. And there was an interview with him and Naomi Wolf. And it was like a two-hour-long episode. And it was amazing.
Yeah. An audio CD would hold all the Liberty podcasts that existed at the time. The current episode.
I think I had three. I had three CDs.
But the reason I'm an audio fascist, I don't like the word audio Nazi. The reason I'm like big on audio and, you know, telling everyone to fix their audio and helping them fix their audio is because this show started as a good audio show. Nima and I were both musicians. We both record. We both had good gear. And, you know, we figured out how to do it right really early on. So
We'd already done a movie together. So we'd already spent hours with together audio. Making audio sound good.
In the same room too. This is, you know, this is not over the internet. This is in the same city.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Yep.
Yeah. We're all nostalgic and stuff. Really weird. But I guess we have to be nostalgic if it's reunion tour, fiends.
I know.
Bring it back, baby.
So talk a little about how Liberty's changed since then. You're kind of appalled. I think it's a good thing.
I'm pretty appalled.
It's a good thing that there's so many libertarians that there can be infighting. When we started, it was like, guys can't fight. We'll ruin liberty. We'll sink the boat, the little dinghy we're all in.
Yeah. I'm just confused by some of the strange tangents that I could never have foreseen.
Flat Earths. People?
Yeah, like, okay, yeah, there's that. I mean, I guess that's the obvious one. That's just not a libertarian thing, though.
Some of it's trolling, though, but some of it's real.
A lot of it's trolling.
It's ridiculous.
I'm more concerned with the people being obsessed with white culture all of a sudden. And like,
what's with that?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I mean, I don't get it either.
The innovation of Western civilization was its individualism, right? That's the big innovation.
Yeah.
If that's the innovation, the innovation is not white power.
You know, it's not. Yeah. It's like white power is the symptom. Tribalism is the disease. It's not just white power. It's a lot of tribalism.
You're right.
Liberty.
Yeah.
And we'll have some more in just a bit on the Freedom Fiends.
The Fiends Tribe.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
On the radio.
People don't know what I'm talking about. You got to go join the Patreon to hear it. You got to pay.
You got to be a patriot.
You could, if you donate more than $3 a month, though, you can hear my patriot only fees.
More than three? Not more than two?
Well, a bunch of people came on and did two and then canceled. Just to get the fee, you know? But like four, you know, in 2 weeks. And I was like, ugh, got to raise this to three. Mm-hmm, so... Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah, that's one other thing that's changed in Liberty since I left is Stefan Molyneux singing the national anthem when a president that he likes gets elected.
Yeah, you know, I was listening.
If you would have asked me in 2014 if I would have ever imagined that, oh, man. I would have to said no.
Yeah, I was listening to a Fiend's Roku, the Fiend's Roku, and like, you know, that's a random feed of every. You know, every episode, like you can hear the Roku feed and hear like this episode and then the first episode from 6 years ago, right after each other. And the other day I heard an episode on there when I was testing it, was making the Roku app or channel. And like, you know, Nima was singing the praises of Stefan Molyneux. And I was just out loud to my cats when my wife wasn't here. I went, ugh, and like put my head in my hand and then kind of started laughing and then went back to what I was doing.
You know? Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Life changes people.
Hey,
I guess.
He was really good. Yeah. For a while.
He was. Yeah.
He was. I mean,
he fooled us all for a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
Or that was
he didn't
maybe,
fool me.
Maybe he was sincere enough at some point. And then
5 years ago, I started thinking he was wonky. And it recently was the 5 year anniversary of when I interviewed him on Anarchy Gumbo. And he started psychoanalyzing me and like saying you know, a bad man because I was into kink and asking about my parents. And it just like, it was like hitting a brick wall with him. And afterwards, I went and listened to it and I was like, I don't know, man. And I started telling people, like, hey, I don't know if this guy's a good guy. And they're just like, I mean, a lot of them just bought his line. Like, no, he's right. You're wrong. You have mental issues, you know, because you like to spank ladies.
No, I don't know if it was who that like for it. Me. For me, it was
not
he had
you.
Some
most people I don't know, like hardcore Molyneux fans, but a lot of friends who liked him were like, but, you know, I really hate this thing of like, oh, but he has a good message. Like, I think if somebody is... they can have some mistakes, but if someone is deeply flawed as an individual, whatever comes out of their mouth is null and void to me. I'll get it from someone else, you know?
Right, and you can get that from elsewhere from Molyneux. But at the time, and you know, he was really good at talking about liberty and anarchy and anarcho-capitalism, and that's where I got the slavery analogy from.
You know what, though? A lot of people still say... yeah, but that one video, the story of your enslavement, you know, I never really loved that video. And there's there's actually a Bill Burr spoken word where he's dissecting that. Have you heard it? And he's making fun of it.
Bill
and he's
Burr?
Like, really? And he's like, yes. And he doesn't even say Molyneux's name. He's like, someone sent me this video and I just watched it and just was like floored before I started laughing out loud. Like, it's so ridiculous. Let me play you some clips for it. And he's mocking him like, and you know that this is true in your heart of hearts. Like, he's so pompous, man.
Is
that's
he?
Such a con job. That whole thing. He went to acting school. He's not a philosopher. He went to acting school, and it's all acting.
Yeah, but, I mean, I can see that now. But, I mean, I think you can take certain turns of phrase from people's canon, even if you don't like them.
The slavery thing's good. The, you know, the we're on a, what is this thing about? We're on a work farm and I don't know, some.
Well, it's you don't ask who would pick the cotton when you're trying to end slavery.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. I've made
that mine. We use that. Yeah. So.
I said that. I said it once, so it's mine. It's not his.
Yeah, no IP, right?
No, that's wrong. You should give people credit, but you know, it's a good one. Ugh, I hate to say it.
Yeah. Anyway,
you know what, I've heard that he really paraphrased a lot of his stuff from is it Immanuel Kant? It's somebody like universally preferable behavior is really a paraphrasing of some classical philosopher.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that all philosophers, though? I mean, aren't most people just paraphrasing
other people?
Most people
pick and choose from a bunch, but his UPB thing is like somebody said all that before with a different name.
Ah, okay.
And he talks about it like it's science.
Sure.
That's another thing. He talks about it like it's science. You know, it's not science.
He talks about it like
he invented. He also says he's the greatest philosopher in the world. I don't want to talk about him. Let's drop it. This is you know what? People hate this on The Fiends. There's people who are like, ugh, I love that show, except when they sit around bashing other libertarians. But yeah, things have changed and you've been stuck.
We're going to bash ourselves before we were libertarians. Right. We're going to bash our former liberal selves.
So we show that we're fair. So Lisa, since Nima and I have not let you get a word in edgewise, so what's the most ridiculous statist thing you've said in your past and how long ago was it?
I can't think of one. I don't think that I ever was a statist. I really wasn't. I mean, I remember,
pure-born.
I think, I read it when I was younger. I mean,
for
like
who?
18, and that was a long time ago. No, I've never voted Democrat.
Oh, this will date her. Who did you vote for?
Nima got cut off. Wait a minute. Nima got cut off saying, one of the things he did was wrote an essay about how great Bill Clinton is and how he's his hero. Okay.
Really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but in my head, when I was writing it, it was Daryl Hammond from SNL, who I think I really liked.
Well, that's excusable then, because he was great.
So who did you vote for, Lisa?
Oh, well, the first time I voted was 1988, so forgive me. I just did what my parents said back then, because, I think it had to be
Dukakis?
A Bush, right? Wasn't it a Bush?
Bush? Oh, so the Republican.
Had to be a Bush.
Yeah, it was Bush.
Yeah,
Bush was 88 to 92, yeah.
Yeah, my parents were Republicans. So that was pre-internet, you know, I didn't really have a lot of resources, and I trusted my parents, so I just did what I voted for who they said to vote for. I used to ask my dad, and he would tell me. And then probably around, I don't know,
no
maybe
new
a few
taxes.
Years after that.
That was his line in that election.
Yeah.
That was Dukakis.
See, that was appealing to me even back then. So,
yeah.
You know, a couple of years after that, I started paying more attention. And I thought, well, I don't agree with any of these people. I guess I'm just an independent. And then I had a neighbor around 2001, and we were talking. My neighbors really like to talk politics, and he asked me, you know, my affiliation, and I said, I don't really have one. I guess you could just say independent. And he said, well, what do you think about government? I said, I think it should just leave people alone and just everybody should mind their own business. And he said,
nice.
Oh, you're a libertarian. And I said, what is
nice.
That? I'd never heard of it.
Nice.
Yeah. So I started reading and I was like, yeah, this makes sense. So then I started voting libertarian and then I stopped voting after 2004.
Who's last?
So
did you ever Ron Paul or Bill? What's his name?
No, it was Michael Badnarik.
Barr.
Badnarik. I wouldn't vote for Barr, no. So
I voted for Barr. The last person I voted for, except
you voted for Bob Barr?
Election.
Yeah.
Man. You know what?
That's when I started to realize there's something wrong with this party.
That's the worst thing. Yeah, you win.
Well, you know, that's not the worst thing. I voted for Nancy Pelosi at one point and for.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Is it Nancy Pelosi or the other gun grabber from San Francisco that's a congresswoman? What's her name?
Diane Feinstein.
Yeah.
Feinstein.
I think I voted for Feinstein. Not for mayor. It was. I think I voted for Pelosi for congresswoman because she was one of them was the San Francisco congresswoman at one point. But that was when I just
That's
voted.
Hard to imagine.
I was a Democrat, but I was a lazy Democrat. If there's something good on TV,
I still feel like voting for Bob Barr is worse than that.
It
I'm
is
sorry.
Because you know
I
why
do.
It's worse than that because I could have since it's a protest.
You should have known better.
I could have written in Ron Paul. Ron
Paul written
was
in Ron.
Running.
Yep.
But
I wrote him in that year.
Barr was on the ballot in California. So I didn't really, I thought, well, you throw away your vote if it's as if voting for Bob Barr isn't throwing,
right. Yeah, that's going to make a difference.
And also, how is the ex head of the CIA who helped write the Patriot Act libertarian? I don't care if I don't care if you become Ben Stone. If that's your past, is writing the Patriot Act, you don't get to be a libertarian star, you know?
You could. Be a libertarian, I guess, but you don't get to be the candidate for.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't want to be a libertarian president anyway, right?
Well,
that's a contradiction in terms.
Kind of too. Part of our coming to liberty was watching that election. What year would that have been?
That's true.
No, 90.
Which election?
2000
with,
something.
With Bob Barr? No. Barr. That was when Obama won. So that was 2008.
Yeah. Okay. That was when I. Became really libertarian, deep minarchist, was right after that. and then was minarchist until I met Nima Vedati. And working on the Guns and Weed movie, I became totally anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist. But
yep.
before a couple of years before that, I was really leaning libertarian. So I'd say like, 2006, though, I started listening to Free Talk Live and bought Boston Tea Party's book, You and the Police. So
right.
That was
right, which then made you buy Boston's Gun Bible.
Yeah,
and Moulin LaBe.
One night to becoming, yeah. So I think around 2007, I could actually go back and look on the pre-state Wyoming forum and probably find out the date. Like the night I talked to Mama Liberty, that's when I really embraced liberty. I took liberty in my heart, made it my Lord and Savior.
How is Free State Wyoming doing? Is that still a thing? Is there still a Wyoming Liberty Fest?
Yeah, but it's really small. I don't want to say.
Just like it was back in the day.
You know, I mean, Ian Freeman says, it's really small and it's not worth, you know, whatever. But it's like, here's the thing. They're not very strong on the internet. They meet in person a lot in small groups. They don't want it
to be big, right? The beauty of Wyoming is not a lot of people live there.
At Pork Fest, you're kind of like a bad person if you're not videotaping everything. At Wyoming Liberty Fest, if you pull out a camera and they don't know you, they're like, why are you filming? You know, it's people who don't want a lot of attention. It's people who aren't yelling on the internet, look at me. It's people who don't have beefs with each other because they're neighbors, because they meet each other and go have supper together. You know, it's largely two counties. There's about 300 of them in Crook and Weston, the upper right north eastern corners, like the harshest weather parts of Wyoming, the ugliest, harshest weather, or not ugly, but like, you know,
with the least payoff. Well, yeah, because I mean, Wyoming's or Yellowstone's probably got harsher weather, but it's worth it.
Yeah, but you know, it's gorgeous,
and the government owns it. Yeah,
it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, and people flock from Japan to see it. But
right,
you know, Weston and Crook, Wyoming,
nothing.
It's like the moon with sagebrush, man. No one wants to go there.
Right.
Except people who want to get away from people who want it easy, like, you know, want to lay on a beach and get welfare.
That sounds kind of nice.
So at least get welfare.
Not the welfare part, the beach part.
Lay on a beach. I don't know.
Getting welfare would make me nervous. I'd feel dirty. I'd
feel dirty. Yeah. I was on food stamps for like 4 months. In San Francisco shortly after I got clean, when I went back to college before I started working in offices, and I had to pay it back before we could get a house. So like, you know, it was a ding on my
credit.
Yeah. And because I, not under the table, but I worked as like a dishwasher to put myself through college at 30. And, you know, there was like 3 weeks or something where it overlapped, where I was getting one check and getting the other check, and they made me pay all of the food stamps back. But I did feel dirty getting it.
I can't believe they used to make people pay that back. Meow. That's weird.
Meow, 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 meow. Yeah. Bank of Hell. That's what they call the welfare place in San Francisco. Bank of Hell.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Or Feeny goodness.
Even better.
No one will know unless they're on the Patreon. You guys put this on the Patreon, too.
I don't have a Patreon.
How could I know?
I don't either.
I don't do any like online media, like serial media, like podcasts or anything like that anymore. I do private stuff, private clients.
You should, you DJ live.
Yeah.
For parties. You should tell it. What is it they use? Telephone, Periscope. You should Periscope those.
Yeah, I don't know. Seems like extra setup to get the good audio. I mean,
really
I don't
want
to record it with cell phone speakers.
I know. So,
Yeah, we actually did that. We did Facebook Live with a New Year's party we did, but it took us like the first 2 hours to figure out how to get the audio to not be like the computer audio, and it's just like, oh man.
Yeah, a friend of mine that's in a punk band in San Francisco that plays with punk bands that I used to watch or play with in San Francisco. Still together or reunion show, like, you know, they're out of jail for murder and they're doing tours again and it's great. So my friend often like posts videos of those live from the show, like when he's the opening band or,
right,
you know, someone's filming him with his camera or he's filming the headlining band with his, you know, and it's really cool to watch like these people I know live. It's kind of a neat experience, but the audio is freaking horrible.
I know. But I feel like we're in a world nowadays where that's how you're supposed to do it. Like you're supposed to have more content rather than better quality content.
Yeah.
But I'm old school enough to where I'm like, oh, I just can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
You drop, I can't FB every live time. Every time you drop the dance floor pops.
Every 4 years.
Right. Yeah.
So Lisa. Lisa was. Yes. Yeah, more Nima. Sorry about that.
No, go for Lisa.
So Lisa was confessing her fins. Yes, she was confessing her sins during the break. She said, "Oh, I remember. I remember a status thing I said or an embarrassing thing I said." And I was like, she started to tell us. I'm like, "Hey, save it for the show," because I always, Neem and I like to get the first react. That's something we did a lot in the fiends early on, and we don't do that much anymore. It's like, yeah, save it for the air. All right.
Yeah. Well, back when I used to vote LP, people used to tell me I was wasting my vote, and I'd say, no, you know, no vote is a wasted vote as long as you vote on principle, you know,
isn't that the Libertarian Party's motto, like motto on their seal?
Is it really?
No, I'm kidding. It should be, no. Because I've heard it out.
Surprise me, but yeah.
It's as common from LP members to say that as it is for status to say who would build the roads, literally.
Ugh.
Yeah. And I thought about voting for Gary Johnson in 2012 and then came to my senses and,
you know, I don't know, Nima, if it's worse to vote for Bob Barr. I think there's an argument that could be made for Austin Peterson and maybe even Gary Johnson. Definitely Austin Peterson.
Well, Austin Peterson wasn't on the ballot though, right? Like nobody actually voted for Austin Peterson.
There's people that were fiercely in favor of him. Like he still has a huge fan club that, like, you know, people will block you if you speak to him.
Yeah. It's worse to be a fan of Austin Peterson than it is to vote for Bob Barr.
Because Bob Barr actually, like, he could talk the talk, at least. You know, Bob Barr is like, non-aggression principle. No, I don't believe in that, you know.
Right, right.
And not even in the sense of like, well, it's a good kind of overthought to, like, you know. Like, I don't absolutely think it's the rule for everything. It's more like this. It's more like, there's a lot of people who say, well, what I did doesn't violate the non-aggression principle, but you can still be a horrible person.
There's the don't be a blank
Richard.
Principle.
Be a Richard. Yeah.
Yeah. That's obviously super important because we have to get along. I mean, libertarians are individualists, but we understand that humans have to live in a society. We have to trade with one another.
It's weird,
though. We have to exchange resources.
It's weird, though, because a lot of internetism is on the internet now, and you can, like, you know, have people blocked and you're talking on the same thread and can't see what
then
the other
person
is saying.
You just don't see them.
That's a weird thing that I have mixed feelings about. Like, I like it, but I don't like it, you know, because in the old days, I think it makes it easier to, like, be a fair weather friend, kind of, you know, because in the old days, like, where the person lived in your town, you know, you couldn't hate them openly.
But don't you block, like, one person a day or something?
Oh, at least. Most of the people I block, I don't know. Most of the people I block are either statists, horrible statists who are defending the state like they're defending their mother, or else they're people I don't know, they're libertarians, meow, that are like, you know, the Richard principle. I keep wanting to say the thing you can't say already. Yeah, like people are just horrible people, but, you know, in theory, are good libertarians. Other than being horrible people, are good libertarians. That's the thing, too. It's weird that you can be a good libertarian before the person.
I think there's horrible people in every society, in every subculture, in every culture.
Especially
in
subcultures, because subcultures are kind of like, you know,
they draw the weirdos.
Insular, and draw the weirdos.
Yeah, we do.
Well, we'll have more weirdos when we return from this trip to the market on the Freedom
Fiends. Lisa's pure. I like how pure she was. Pretty pure, Lisa.
Was?
Thank you.
Pretty close. No, she is. Like, no. Like, she wasn't much of a state. That's true.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. Are you going to do the intro, Michael? I don't actually have it anymore. I don't know the current intro. This is the Freedom Fiends talk radio show. Jeez, that's a lot. It's like $1,700.
That was like $30. No, that was like $10.
We had 6 Bitcoin. Imagine how much that would be.
Three. We had three.
Did we have three?
Back when it was $30.
So we had three each.
Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon. High atop Financial Beast Plaza. On the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire into your cortex now. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Michael W. Dean. We got Lisa Fiend here. And Nima Vidati, who started the show with me 6 years ago. We've been on radio for 4 years. Now, speaking of LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region, why is it important, Nima, that the Freedom Fiends have just passed 4 years of being on radio?
Because that was our estimate for when it would take the radio signals to travel to Alpha Centauri. So the aliens could hear us and come save. Well, I guess, assuming speed of light, another 4 years from now, they might come save us.
Well, my theory is that they can get here quicker than the speed of light.
But then couldn't they maybe have a way of listening quicker than the speed of light?
No.
Or no?
Because it's only radio. One way? It's old technology. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah,
you could justify it either way, but I mean, if they can get here quicker than the speed of light, who knows? Anytime between now and 4 years, if they don't care, they may never come, and if they don't exist, they may never come. But
or they may be huge statists and come wipe out the Earth because they heard the Freedom
Fiends. Oh yeah, I never thought of that.
I mean, that's a common thought too. I mean, they actually explore this in the movie Independence Day, a big Hollywood popcorn movie. But you know. If there is intelligent life, it's not necessarily going to come and be our benevolent friend and bring us advanced technology. You know, it might just like wipe us out and steal our water, and you know, use the earth for resources until it's a lifeless husk.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I guess you don't really know. Or it could be that for civilization to survive that long past their equivalent nuclear age, they have to be more peaceful and less status than us.
So. Yeah.
Well,
when this doesn't, when it reaches 4.3 light years and we have a big party on the Freedom Fiends, and then the next day the aliens don't come down. Oh, I've evolved this theory since you left the Fiends, Nima. So the basic thing is they're going to hear the Fiends and say, wow, we've been listening to this planet for 100 years. There's actually intelligent life here. And they're going to come give me their advanced technology to prevent the state.
Just
or,
you.
Take me and who I want, you know, 40 or 50 friends I choose to. So be nice to me, people. Or you're
it'll be the anarchy rapture.
You're getting left behind. Yes. The anarchy rapture. I think we have a show title. The anarchy rapture with Nima Vidati.
Yeah. There it is. That's fun.
Yeah. Anarchy rapture. Yeah. So when it doesn't happen, you know, the day after 4.7 years on radio. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do what Doomsday.
You're gonna say you miscalculated, right?
Right. When Jesus doesn't come on the day,
I forgot to carry the one. Except
Or I can also pull out the fact that I realized about a year ago, which is that Alpha Centauri is only visible from the southern hemisphere, so it's totally not line of sight, and it's really doubtful that radio signals from here would reach there. But they found other other possibly habitable Earth-like habits, what they call Goldilocks planets. Do you guys know what that means?
No.
It's in the habitable zone of a star system.
It's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's just right.
So it can have like liquid water. Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right.
I mean, there's other people that say you don't have to have liquid water for life. So
right. And, you know, what defines life? It's not necessarily going to be advanced, cuddly humanoids that want to give us things. It could be, you know, some virus that only lives in volcanoes, molten diamond volcanoes in an ammonia atmosphere.
Or like space whales.
That wouldn't care.
That think of us as plankton or something.
Futurama, man. Always with the Futurama.
I think every sci-fi has some kind of space whale, right? Some kind of large creature that floats in space. Yeah.
No, but every sci-fi, the money is called credits, according to Roger Ebert's book.
Mm.
And that is pretty much true. No matter if it's like in the distant future or now in a parallel universe, it's always called credits. And I kind of think that's like...
Unless you're a Ferengi, and then it's gold-plated latinum, because you're the ANCAPs. No, Bitcoin,
Yeah, it's credits.
Credits.
I mean, it would make sense, wouldn't it, that advanced civilization... I mean, I almost think Bitcoin is something from an advanced civilization, because it's... It's so weird, and it's the idea of like a global ledger that cannot be altered to say what it, you know, what hasn't happened. Like, it can't be lied to, really. That's a
I feel like them
idea.
Calling it credits is really statist, because they're assuming it's
statist,
centralized.
It's also
at that
a cop out, you know. Like,
yeah, it's
okay,
a cop-out.
It seems like the, you know, the writer put in a filler word and said, "I'll come back later," but forgot to.
Yeah, just credits.
Yeah,
it should be like space coin or something like that.
Space coin.
Yeah,
yeah. That sounds like something.
The dark matter dollar.
Someone would make. Georgia executes J.W. Ledford Jr. by lethal injection. Hey man, I got the breaking news right here. I've got the stock ticker on my computer.
The state killed somebody? Wow.
State just killed somebody.
Surprising.
While we were talking. While we were talking. Yeah. Neiman and I talked about 5 years ago about how, you know, everybody probably commits 3 felonies a day, and there's no way to know all the laws. Even lawyers don't know all the laws. They have to have reference books and reference internet pay-only services
Westlaw.
To reference all the laws.
Right.
Yeah. And no, they do.
It's true. I know.
You meant,
oh, no, it's
no,
absolutely
right.
True.
Because
there's like 300,000 laws at the federal level alone.
And they were adding, you know, and like lawmakers largely measure their success on how many laws they pass. Like a lot of people, lawmakers included, said Ron Paul was not an effective congressman because he only ever passed 1 law. And it was like to
But he voted no
something.
So many
like
times.
Yeah.
So that's why we think he's great.
That's why he's so successful.
Yeah.
And
how many things you vote against is what makes him successful.
Be, yeah.
Dr. No.
Yeah. Well, I always like to think the minarchist idea too of, you know, every congressman starts at a salary of $1 million a year and loses $100,000 for every law he passes.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like that tip thing that mean people do where they leave the $5 on the table in ones, take $1 away every time you forget the ranch.
That's so weird. Every time you forget the ranch. It's French. It's a mixture of French and ranch. We call it French. You know what that's
from?
That
actually sounds good.
That's from
I eat that.
That's from the German guy in Breaking Bad that commits suicide with the defibrillator.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because he's testing all the chicken nugget sauces before he offs
and
himself.
And the food, the you know, sons of Nazi scientists who are now food scientists.
Can you imagine being one of the food scientists who designed those flavors, and then the guy that tests them goes and kills himself in the bathroom?
The marketing will probably come up with a better name.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that. The scientists say that. He's not the scientist. He's the, like, division head that's, you know, has to deal with the scientists once
a week. Right, right. Well, the scientist says it, but then, like, after he says that, the guy gets up and literally goes to the bathroom to kill himself.
And commits, like, the weirdest suicide on TV ever. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't remember that scene.
He takes a defibrillator
off the wall,
uses it How does he do it? How does he do it?
He goes in the bathroom, locks the door, takes off his shirt very meticulously. Yeah. Kind of like how, you know,
he German engineered his own suicide.
Yes. Kind of like how Chicken Man like straightens his tie after his face is blown off before he dies. And how he when he goes to vomit up the poison when he at in Mexico, you know, at the pool.
How he lays the towel down.
Yes. Yes.
To set his knees on so he's comfortable while he vomits out the poison.
And there's something about that scene There's something about that scene too that seems kind of samurai-ish to me, you know,
like definitely
the routine before, you know, the seppuku, is that what it's called? Yeah, but
seppuku.
That should be a thing, like when somebody messes up, just say
just do the seppuku sound effect. Okay,
we started something. Yeah,
you should put that on Fiend Phone when you disconnect instead of the bad scratch. The
new thing? That's such a good
have
idea.
You heard the new one, Dima?
The scratch has,
It's like
the scratch sample that plays on like the little $10 keyboards that you buy at Goodwill.
I'm scratching, wickety 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 woo.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Like the sun in Bob's Burgers on his keyboard.
Yeah. Well, not even that high quality, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what we started this conversation with. I think we're going to talk about Lisa's past and Nima's past, but go back up eight levels.
We were on Alpha Centauri, and then somehow we got on the guy, the German guy, killing himself because of French, and then the scientist being like, oh, my God, my French killed that guy.
Then the state killed somebody while we were talking. Well, let's talk about that.
That's right. Yeah.
That's Georgia. Yeah.
Right? Nima, drop some mad science on why we think it's probably okay to shoot somebody who's trying to hurt your family, but that the state killing people is not a good idea. Why is that?
Why would the state killing people be a good idea? I can't think of a good reason. Mostly because what the state does is it defends its own narrow self-interests.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a guiding principle like protecting human life or protecting its own family.
It also doesn't deter heinous
it's
crimes.
Kind of just
no,
I don't think so. My buffering heart.
I'll turn up.
I'm going to explode.
Your 2-year-old just got up and started watching Netflix.
They would do that, yeah. They both know how to turn on the PlayStation.
The state executes a lot of innocent people, and it's been proven with DNA. And also,
a lot of innocent people that are mentally ill that can't defend themselves.
Yeah, and the state also, you know, it does not deter violent crime. Studies have shown that. And what's the other thing?
I would venture that the state encourages violent crime. If the state is what
violent crime.
It is violent crime, right? But I would venture that it encourages people to do private violent crimes, because when you grow up in a society where that is the ultimate arbiter of disputes is state violence, that is what everything rests on.
I mean, people have been killing each other forever since before the state, but
That's true.
Not in quite a mechanized, statist way.
Well, I mean, we got World War I and World War II because of the fullness of the final of having the total state.
You got a mouse as in humans, your pocket. Pocketing? Yeah, I know.
Humanity almost killed itself because of the state in World War I and World War II.
Ugh. Why is war bad? You got about 45 seconds, Dima.
I mean, do you even have to answer it? I mean,
because people in the cheap seats listening. Oh, and the reason I say cheap seats, I wanted to explain this. We might have to carry your answer over. I say it all the time, the people in cheap seats, meaning the people listening. And I don't mean the bad people or the poor people. I actually mean the good people. And I figured out why I've been saying this since we've been on the podcast now. There's a video of the Beatles playing for the Queen back in the 60s. And after one song, John Lennon says, "Oh, Roy, you can, like, nobody claps." And he's like, just wiggle your jewelry. You people in the cheap seats can clap or something like that.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there's a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Michael, W. Dean, and Lisa Fiend. Lisa, is that what we're doing?
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Awesome. So I think you were talking about war is bad, right? That was what you were asking, Michael. Is war bad?
I'm going to wind you two up and let you go on this, because I'm just going to say cliches on this. And Nima actually says stuff that probably has become cliches, because a lot of people don't know this, but the Fiends coined some phrases that are common that people who don't even know who the Fiends are use.
Like what? Don't drone me, bro.
Don't tase me, bro. Or don't drone me, bro.
Don't drone me, bro. Yeah, don't tase me was the guy that got tased.
You can go look on the free on the internet, and the earliest example you can find of don't tase me, don't drone me, bro, was us. But there's like t-shirts of that and stuff now. There's a few others. Worms.
So I think some people have it in their head that war is like this idealized version of like European knights fighting each other voluntarily and not killing each other, not killing a bunch of civilians in the countryside. Yeah. But I mean, nowadays it's literally robots dropping death bombs on kids and women and teenagers and on citizens. Monkey bars and American citizens. Yeah.
Two now. Do you know they killed his
daughter?
Killed Al-Awlaki's son a few years ago.
And then the daughter.
Donald Trump killed his daughter within his first like 30 days in office.
People who have never done anything. Just they had the, you know, kids. And people have actually said they had the wrong dad. Like as if you have a choice in that, man.
I think that was a press secretary, right? That was Obama's press secretary who said he should have had a better dad.
Sounds right.
And this was this kid went to an American high school. He had a Facebook page. He was just a normal American teen. Yeah. Exploded into oblivion. His grandpa, who's actually like a peaceful pillar of the community or something, like a doctor, some kind of professional job, went looking, obviously, for his grandson and found just a lock of his hair, just a chunk of hair on the ground that he remembered because the kid had, you know, this iconic curly hair that everybody talked about him, you know, of that beautiful hair.
And I do remember found that. Some of it
on the ground. Nobody can really think of a good reason why that happened. Al-Awlaki, you might say, oh, well, they were just killing a terrorist. Al-Awlaki was a YouTuber.
he was calling for violence, but he hadn't done any. But, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's a bad guy. But
I can't condone that, but I can see why the state killed him. I can't see why they killed his kids who had none of that in them. I think it was because, you know, really, talk about knights. That's kind of going back to like a Roman thing of kill the firstborn so they can't grow up and go against the king. You know,
well, if you were Al-Awlaki's kids, wouldn't you sue? And you were an American citizen, you'd have standing to sue the United States government.
Definitely.
When he grew up. I mean, not even you wouldn't even have to wait till you grew up, till you found counsel willing to take on your case. So it makes sense why they did it. But it's completely horrible. And so that's literally what the state does, is it takes completely cold, calculated decisions based on its own benefit or the benefit of special interests who wield the state. I think my analogy that I used to say on the Fiends is the state is like a giant gun turret in the middle of society. And people are always scrambling to either grab it and use it against their enemies or to influence the people that already have use of it. And war is just one of the ways they do that to get what they need. It's not defending freedom. I mean, I know a lot of people think that, and that is a noble instinct to want to defend the freedom in your country and your homeland. That's totally a noble instinct. The problem is, think about the last time an average Syrian stole 30% of your income in a year. Does anybody have an example of that in their own personal life? I don't think so.
I'm going to play the statist in this. I'm going to ask questions like a listener might ask. And, you know, unlike other shows, we're not going to yell at the statist because we understand it because we were like that one time. So if I say, what do you mean? Who steals 30% of your income? What do you mean, Nima?
Well, I mean, government. I mean, that's a low estimate. And yeah, maybe 50, on your income, 50. Maybe on your, yeah, that's maybe a high estimate. I mean, it's hard to calculate it because the taxation happens on all different levels, you know, and things are taxed multiple
times.
Yeah,
when you buy a candy bar, you're paying the gas tax on the truck that brought it to you and, right. you know, the tax on the electricity in the Walmart and the,
right.
you know, the property tax the Walmart's paying.
So even if you don't make enough money, say, to actually have income tax taken out or whatever, yeah. you get the whole refund, you're still constantly paying fees and taxes. The government's still milking you constantly.
All governments, not just the United States government.
All governments. And if you want to talk about taking away your freedom, like we said in previous segments, there are so many laws on the books that pretty much any Fed could probably lock you away at their whim. And cops are always out patrolling, making sure you're not speeding, doing little things here and there.
I got up today and went to the UPS store, and you know where that is, Nima, right? And you know where I live. So that's, I don't know, mm-hmm. a mile, 2 miles. I saw four cops there and back at 8 a.m., like, you know, right. trying to bus people peacefully going about their way to work, you know?
Right.
And busting people for, you know, they bus people for one couple miles over the speed limit. They're trying to make a quota when they're doing that.
Right. And so I guess my point is the people that are out there violating your rights on a daily basis are government employees.
Yeah.
They're not people in Afghanistan or Yemen.
So, we'll talk about blowback when we get back from this trip to the market. Worms now.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
I love The Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
I think Michael W. Dean is taking a little break. It's me and Lisa over here. How you doing, Lisa?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. So I guess one of us is going to have to play devil's advocate. Obviously, in the last segment, I made some radical statements about how killing people is bad. So I would say if I was playing devil's advocate, well, what about 9/11? Obviously, and I do really believe it is a tragedy, but obviously a lot of people lost their lives. That's your ultimate right, right? Is your right to life, your right to keep existing and not be exploded or collapsed inside of a tower. What do you say to people who use that as a justification for the 16 years of war and we're still going?
I say so many things. I say two wrongs don't make a right. I talk about blowback, so that's a vicious cycle. So obviously, if, you know, a country, I don't want to say we, because I don't count myself in this,
right.
but if a country, if a military goes and attacks, you know, who they believe is the culprit, and then more civilians are killed, then it just starts a vicious cycle that's never ending, and we find ourselves in perpetual war.
Perpetual.
Where's it going to end? It's never going to end.
The best recruiting tool for ISIS is America blowing up wedding parties.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think a great example is the fact that we have ISIS right now. And when you create a war zone, the worst people rise to the top, right? The most ruthless, the most willing to kill and murder and scout out all their enemies and make sure they die rise to the top, right? So we started out, Al-Qaeda was a few hundred people. at some point when the United States had them pinned down in Tora Bora. A few hundred people, possibly, in Al-Qaeda. And then ISIS has controls land about the size of England, you know, at its highest, at its peak. And that came while the United States was engaging in the War of Terror. Because of it, resulting from it, because of the action. So the war didn't stop terrorism. It enhanced it, like a tenfold, orders of magnitude bigger than it was previously.
Right. And you can't fight an ideology anyway. I mean, if there are certain people that hate certain other groups of people, how is war going to stop that?
It's not. I mean, war didn't stop communism. What stopped communism was rock and roll and blue jeans. And that's me and Michael, Bruce Springsteen. Right. What stops these crazy outdated ideologies is trade and peace and immigration, right? I mean, when you grow up in a more free culture, even if your parents are from the old country, you want the fun things, right? You might go to your parents' church or mosque or synagogue or whatever, but what you're really enjoying in your free time is all the cool things that American kids or European kids or wherever you move to get to do, the internet and skateboards and premarital sex and all the fun stuff.
Right.
And, you know, there's a thing in Indian tribes where they used to kidnap people from each other's tribes to prevent war. And I'm not saying kidnapping's good, but you're a lot less likely to try to destroy a bunch of people in a geographic area all at once if people you love or have a connection to live there.
Yep. Yep. Especially the connection to, right? If all the billionaires in America have billions of dollars worth of assets in China, it really limits the possibility that there's going to be a major war with China.
Doesn't it? What is it? Where trade flows, bullets don't. Is that the saying?
It's where something goods like don't cross. Armies soon will, or something. Like that.
Yeah. Who said that? Is that Will Grigg or older than that?
Probably people paraphrasing Bastiat or something like that.
Sounds right.
It's one of those things, like the aggression principle, that kind of just gets reiterated in different forms.
You know, we were talking to the break a little bit about, like, you know, the statist answer could have been to that whole first part about, you know, why war is bad. Like, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, blow them all up, turn the Middle East into glass, forgetting that, you know, Israel is in the middle of the Middle East and America is supposedly friends with it. And you can't use nukes on one country without destroying Israel anywhere over there.
Well, whenever they do studies on, like, do you know where Ukraine is? Do you support military action in Ukraine? They're always correlated. The people that don't know where a country is are the people most likely to want military action there.
Right. You know, they just asked that about North Korea, and I forget what the percentage was. It was like 60%, like 36
people.
I
thought it was like 36 people out of like 1,600 people could actually find North Korea on a map. Like less than 1%.
I can find North Korea on a map, and I'm not even that savvy with geography. Just go to Japan.
It's just north of South Korea. It's on the name. It's in the name.
Yep. But, you know, the question, you know, the statist who's not horrible and just wants to nuke them all and let God sort them out. The one who's like, well, yeah, but, you know, 9/11, all the people who died in 9/11, horrible thing, horrible, horrible thing. Here's the thing, though. Most of those people were Saudi Arabian. Not saying you should punish the whole country for it.
You're talking about the hijackers. The hijackers were Saudi.
Oh, right.
15 Thank of
you.
The 19.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You're so good with radio, man. I like it.
Yeah, he is.
Yep. Yep.
I'm learning.
We always we try to help each other not bury the lead. Are you saying you're floating? Is that what said Lisa?
No, I said I'm learning.
I'm floating, man. You guys are so good. I'm just floating.
Yes, that too. That works.
But, you know, so all those people, most of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. So, you know, George Bush went in and bombed the crap out of, where was it? I can't even remember.
Iraq.
Yeah.
And had
things were proven now to be BS, that there were weapons of mass destruction, and then, like, spread to Afghanistan because they chased the few bad guys that hated America that were doing something about it out of Iraq into Afghanistan. And then, you know, ISIS
destroying Iraq basically gave Iraq to Iran, which was the other big boogeyman that they all hate. So then they had to do the redirect, and they had to destroy Libya and then Syria.
Now Syria's in there. Yep.
Basically, you can't bomb or shoot your way out of this. It's an ideological thing, and it's those people don't hate America because you have blue jeans. A lot of them are wearing blue jeans. Look at ISIS.
Well,
it didn't start off as an ideological thing.
It became one because of the warfare. Right.
So every time they blow up a wedding party there and kill, you know, 50 people trying to get one bad guy, they're making like 500 terrorists every time they do that.
Yes. Yeah, if you grow up in a Mad Max hellscape and you have whatever, it doesn't matter the religion. You just have somebody who's respected in the community who's saying, the invaders are out to get us, they're killing us, and God says you must fight to go to heaven, and your cousin dies and your brother dies and they're all getting bombed by this one bogeyman, you're going to latch on to that ideology, right? If you live in a society where nobody's dying like that and where everybody grows up and goes to college and has a job and raises
like
kids.
Saudi Arabia. Like a lot of Saudi Arabia. That's the thing the thought I didn't finish was that Saudi Arabia, like, you know, Trump's not keeping people from Saudi Arabia from coming here because he owns golf courses there, man. And because Saudi Arabia is a friend of America. And the funny thing is, too, like, you know, America says they have to go in and, like, you know, kill some, just punish some country in some way because, you know, they punish homosexuals. Or that's one of the things, like, to get the public support to just bomb the crap out of entire cities to try to fight ISIS. You know, they're like, well, you know, here's a video of them throwing a homosexual off a roof for being homosexual and killing him while the crowd watches and cheers. That may be a real video. It may be faked. There's some. So I think ISIS exists. I think that they exist because of United States overseas intervention.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the stuff is faked. I mean, they almost sound too evil. You know, it's almost like, okay, people got sleepy about Al-Qaeda. They got all up in arms for about 10 years and then forgot about it. We need, you know, we like kind of how like drug addiction was a big deal. And then people kind of just got used to it. Like, oh, there's heroin addicts. It happens. You know, your TV gets stolen once in a while. If you live in New York, it's part of living there. And
well, they killed bin Laden. So technically they needed a new boogeyman.
Then they needed crack. You know, ISIS is the crack of drug addiction, of terrorism, you know?
That's great.
And, you know, crack was, if not created by the United States government, I mean, the CIA was funding itself by bringing cocaine in. That's almost proven.
Yeah. And then after crack, we needed meth. And now after meth
was always there. It just became chic.
Crystal.
Yeah. Hillbilly coke. Yeah. But,
And now there's a new drug that if you just touch it, it can kill you.
What's that? Oh, yeah, fentanyl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fentanyl crocodile derivatives, yeah.
Yes.
Crocodile. Then there's crocodile. Yeah,
something
ISIS
like
are
that.
The crocodile of drug of terrorists, you know, compared to heroin addiction. Heroin addiction, you just go to sleep and never wake up, you know. Crocodile, you eventually do that, but first your arms rot off and you look like a literally like a zombie from Walking Dead, you know.
It's pretty metal, though.
It's pretty metal. I loved when we turned Brandon Small onto the idea of crocodile live on the air, interviewing him.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh my God, what am I looking at? Like live on, like, how can you turn Brandon Small onto something?
We freaked out. Death clock. Yeah.
Right. It's one of the high points of my life, man. Definitely. There have been a lot of them.
Definitely. That and laughing at Chris Novoselic.
Well, the first half of the Chris Novoselic interview is amazing. Where he's just talking about music and how great my band
I just felt bad that
how Kurt Cobain loved my band. But then the second hour we're like, okay, so you've got this book, you're on the show, let's have you pimp your book. You have this plan to fix America with proportional voting, and it just turned into like, ugh. Like that guy's so close to being flipped to be a libertarian, but just can't he actually like backed Ron Paul. You know, he's so close, but he just can't give up the we need to fix this through the state. From a guy who like rocked the world with music, you know? I don't get it.
I don't either.
I love him and he's welcome to come back on the show anytime if he just talks about music. And how Kurt Cobain liked my band. All right. So
So war bad, drugs bad.
War bad. Drugs
government
bad. Drugs
the worst.
Bad. Well, drugs bad, but you know,
crocodile,
the drug war. The drug war is worse than drugs.
Worse than drugs.
We got to say that. The drug war does far more harm to people
far
than drugs
worse.
Ever could. And you know, I like Ron Paul's a statist. He's our favorite statist. But I will quote him in saying, you know, heroin's a medical problem. It's not a legal problem. It should be dealt with by doctors.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yep. And if it were legal, no one would have to steal to get it. It'd be available in Walmart. Between the sugar and salt, but hopefully in a different aisle so you wouldn't have any confusion.
Let's hope so.
I mean, these days,
even if
you could only buy it online, but you just didn't have cops spying on you constantly in case you did. I'd be fine worms with that too. I mean, I guess what it comes down to is it's not up to anybody else what you put in your body. There I mean, it's freedom of ingestion. We had the song in Guns and Weed. So
I've heard that quoted by people who might not know the Fiends. You came up with that line. It was something we said should have been in the Bill of Rights, freedom of ingestion.
Right.
Yeah. I've never heard that concept. Want. I like it, though.
You can
I
eat like what it. You want. You can smoke what you want. You can shoot what you want. You know.
Well, it makes like, sense, right? I mean, if you can read what you want,
as you want.
And somebody else makes that point too. That if you can consume what you want mentally, right? I mean, that's what freedom of speech is. I mean, you can read whatever, you can say whatever. I mean, your body's just an outcropping of that. So if you have the right to decide what goes in your ears, why don't you have the right to decide what goes in your nose or your mouth or any of your other holes? We'll be back just a little bit on the freedom.
I like that, and it's late enough at night that that's not true yet. I mean, okay. If your kids are listening to this show on the radio right now, where are
you're
you?
Cool.
You're cool and don't care. Or where cool. are you? You know?
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom Fiends, saving the universe. Freedom Fiends, doing the things that I could.
Taking the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate. You'll hear the truth today. Yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block for the fiends on the block. Ain't never gonna stop in the glass go blow.
This is Neil Gaddai here with Michael W. Dean and Lisa Fiend. Are you there, Lisa?
She's still connected, but she fell off. I hope she's okay.
You got droned. Okay.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about
parenting.
Peaceful parenting. If you join us again, Lisa, just hop in. I was going to ask her. I was going to ask her if peaceful parenting was always a part of her life, or she come into it later after her kids were a little bit older, or what. But I guess she's look. Are you there?
I'm here now. Yeah, that was weird. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a long buffer.
It's all right. Gremlins.
Did you hear Nima's question for you?
No, I heard Nima saying he was going to ask me something. Mm-hmm.
So peaceful parenting kind of means a whole basket of things these days. But did you deliberately raise your kids with freedom and non-aggression and liberty in mind?
Non-spanking.
That was just natural to me. So my oldest is 24. So when she was a baby, I didn't know anybody else who had kids because I was young. I was 22 and didn't know any other parents. And I just kind of did what felt naturally to me. So I read a lot of parenting books and none of them talked about co-sleeping or any of these things that just felt natural to me. So I just did what felt right. So, you know, we tried to put her in a crib and she didn't like it. She cried. And I said, well, I'm just going to put her next to me. She sleeps like that. So I just did what was intuitively what worked for us. And that ended up being peaceful parenting with both of them. So it just, I think it's just, it happened to be in my nature to be that way. And my parents didn't spank us, you know, they were peaceful. My mom, you know, my parents are from New York. My mom has a bit of a temper. She yelled quite a bit, but we were never hit. We were never, my dad would sit us down and talk to us about things. So
isn't that weird how she's from New York? She had a temper and yelled a lot. Requires no more explanation.
Right.
And everyone from New York
could have just said she's from New York.
And they're proud of it. They're proud of that. It's weird.
People know she's, you know, my mom is a very, I just knew what was expected of me. I knew I was expected to be a decent human being and to be honest and to communicate. So my father, you know, he was the one that would talk to us. He would sit us down if we did something wrong and just say, what made you decide to do it this way? It was almost like a business meeting. So that's he's a very, very calm, rational, logical person. And that was my parenting model. So I just grew up with that. So for me to hear about people, you know, getting spanked and yelled at and all these other things, it's so foreign to me. It's like I grew up in some kind of bubble. And so you know, when I get into discussions with people about peaceful parenting, I'm just like, oh, everybody doesn't do it this way. It seems to me that
obvious.
Just,
yeah.
Right. Right. Just intuitive.
That makes sense. I'm about 3 years and a few months in now to having, and I have two kids now, and we deliberately, I mean, we don't plan on sending them to school. We want to homeschool and or good. Unschool them. we try hard. I mean, we don't always succeed at not using rewards and punishment, but rather using explanations. And most of the time it works, especially with Lily. She's very verbal. Mm-hmm. She talks pretty much on the same level as me almost. But then I find, I wonder sometimes, and I doubt myself, because she's so good at that she's so good at weaseling her way out of things. Like, she outsmarts me and she rationalizes her own actions in her own head. And so I wonder, I mean, I can't think of anything else to do. I mean, it's not like I want to hit her or anything. Right. But I wonder what kind of challenges that you face raising kids like that might be different from an authoritarian household or a household with strict rules.
My kids are both that way too. And so, yeah, that can be kind of challenging. And there are times what we do is, you know, if we disagree on something about how something should be handled or about whether or not they should do a certain thing or be allowed to do a certain thing, we talk it out. And my son is particularly good at, he's 17, very, very good at, he's very logical and rational. Yes, very good at convincing me. And I always say, you know, he could sell ice to Eskimos. He happens to be in sales now, and he's very good at it.
Yeah, I mean, when they grow up, that's a good skill for a person.
It is a good skill.
Yeah.
For a parent, it can be really frustrating, though, at times, right. Yeah. And what's funny is he'll ask me, you know, I want to go do this, and I'll say, well, you know, I don't think it's a good idea, and he'll say why, and I'll say why, you know, what my reasons are. And then he presents his argument, and I'm like, oh, I really can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Wrap it up, B.
Wrap it up, B. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. I guess it's just patience. But I think no matter what kind of parent you are, it requires an amount of patience you heretofore would never have known you needed. Nobody
so
explains
true.
That to you.
And you learn so really much about across. Yourself.
Yeah, like all these TV shows where there's like families or kids, like you never, or there's babies, you never see the babies. Like you don't see the baby. You just see the characters in the show.
That's true.
Well, I think that was an awesome Fiends. It felt really good to be back. Thank you for having me on, Michael. And thank you for being so great, Lisa.
Oh, it was a great time. It was about time I got to be on with you.